today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
That's my first conception, man. That's the way I thought it should go. And I still do. I mean, of course, it could stand much improvement. Most likely in another 25, maybe 50 years, some youngster will come along and take the style and really do something with it, you know?
Everybody, this is Patrick Foster. Welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. I want to say that on behalf of Jim Linehan, my co-host, co-founder, and great friend. We are here today to conclude our mini history series on bebop. The first episode basically talked about what bebop was, its origin, and some of the early recordings. And yesterday we talked about how the music went mainstream, relatively mainstream, that is, and talked about four main stars of bebop, those being Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, and Miles Davis, all big jazz names. And today we're very briefly going to touch on three movements that sprung from bebop. And those all sort of branched out and went on to be divergent forms of music, but I don't think would have been possible without bebop. And all the things that followed, bebop really was a seismic impact on the jazz world. It marked the end of the swing era and ushered in an entire cornucopia of modern jazz styles. And it all sprung from the innovations that happened with bebop. So let's talk about where tendrils of bebop reached out to. And the first one we'll talk about is cool jazz. Cool jazz basically is kind of what it sounds like. It featured much more relaxed tempos and a lighter tone than was used in bebop. They often employed formal arrangements where bebop was mainly improvisation other than the head arrangements. And cool jazz often incorporated elements of classical music, strings. I found a quote here on The Source of All Human Knowledge where a jazz historian said, "The tonal sonorities of West Coast jazz players could be compared to pastel colors, where the solos of Dizzy Gillespie and his followers could be compared to fiery red colors." So that's a very good analogy right there. Think of it as fire of bebop and intensity, and then the cool, relaxed pastels of cool jazz. There were several artists who were leaders in cool jazz, and interestingly enough, Miles Davis was right at the forefront of those. Miles became somewhat disenfranchised with bebop at some point, and mainly it was because, I don't think it was because of his distaste for the music or anything like that. It's just that his mind, his musical mind, was so active and so restless and could see so far beyond that he wanted to do something else. And in the late 1940s, 48 and 49, he actually put together a 9-piece band, the Miles Davis Nonette, and they recorded several singles and a couple of 78s that were eventually compiled later in the 50s into an album called Birth of the Cool. And it really was the birth of the cool jazz style. I think simultaneously there were musicians on the West Coast who were developing a cool jazz sound as well. And some folks call it West Coast jazz, but that's kind of getting into the nomenclature weeds, I think. But there were people playing out there who played in sort of a relaxed California lifestyle jazz. They transferred the sun and the bright relaxed feeling of California and the beach to jazz music. I'll give you three albums that I think are really important. The first being Jerry Mulligan Quartet, Volume 1, is an outstanding example of cool jazz and West Coast jazz. You'll have Jerry Mulligan himself. You also have Chet Baker with his subdued trumpet tones on that record. You'll hear him at his peak there. Then you have one by Stan Getz called West Coast Jazz, just what it says. And very much the pastel colors and the cool, relaxed tones of cool jazz. And then sort of the fountainhead is Miles, The Birth of the Cool. So let's hear something from The Birth of the Cool. Let's hear a track, interestingly enough, called Boplicity. Get right there, the arrangement, very much horns playing in sync and descending scales in a very calm, sort of relaxed style. It's just a pretty amazing innovation for somebody who'd been playing bop, 2 years before, right at its fullest, bebop. And again, just another example of Miles's incredible mind. And he would go on to explore this kind of style for several years, and it all culminated, of course, in what many consider the most famous jazz album of all time, which is Miles' Kind of Blue. But you can hear the beginnings of it right there for sure. The next style I want to briefly talk about is Afro-Cuban jazz. Now, the pioneers of Afro-Cuban jazz were a band called Machito and his Afro-Cubans. And Machito was a very interesting character who took Machito as his stage name. He played all kinds of interesting music, but mainly based around the clave rhythm of Cuban music. The band provided a forum for musical ideas, compositions, and arrangements in a progressive style. They were trying to explore the fusion of Afro-Cuban music with jazz arranging and jazz-oriented solos. And they did all this in a multiracial band, too, which is very interesting. And they began in the early 40s and eventually made their way to New York City and were playing on the scene in after World War II. And in the late 40s, actually started inviting American jazz soloists to play on their records and reached a much higher level of popularity with that fusion. And also, apparently during the 1950s, I don't know much about it, but there was a mambo craze where people were really into doing the mambo. And Machito and the Afro-Cubans were very popular during that time as well. But a key collaboration took place between Dizzy Gillespie, that man who runs through all of bebop, and percussionist Chano Pozo. He brought the Afro-Cuban rhythms and instruments, and mainly the bongos was a big instrument that was incorporated into the East Coast jazz scene. And there's a song that Dizzy and Chano put together with some other musicians that's kind of a key early Afro-Cuban song, and it's called Manteca. Thank you. right, so you can hear the fusion of the two styles right there. And I personally, to me, it hits so many pleasure centers. Like, I totally love Afro-Cuban jazz. I just think it's amazing. And some call it Cubop or Cuban bebop. And there's a very interesting album out there on the streamings that you can find. It's called Manteca, The Roots of Afro-Cuban Jazz. And it's got some of the people we're talking about, a whole record that Dizzy did under the title Dizzy and His Orchestra, a whole Afro-Cuban album. It's got a whole bunch of other people. It's got Machito and his Cuban jazz ensemble, all kinds of people. It's a great place to start. So if you can find that one, that would be a really good place to dive into more Afro-Cuban jazz. Stan Kenton made an album in 1956 called Cuban Fire. Kenny Dorham made a record called Afro-Cuban in 1955, and Sabu made a record called Palo Congo in 1957. All excellent examples of Afro-Cuban jazz, a style I really like to listen to. I just find it fascinating. I love Cuban music to begin with, but put some bebop in it, and it gets even better, in my opinion. The third style I want to briefly mention is hard bop. And the interesting thing about hard bop, it was created, most agree, by a generation of African-American musicians who were growing up and coming of age at a time when bebop and on one hand and rhythm and blues on the other hand were the dominant forms of American music being created by African-Americans. And unlike bebop, similar to cool jazz, hard bop was composed and planned out and reflected the roots of jazz as well as elements of soul and the music that would eventually develop into funk. So it was played at a propulsive rate, unlike cool jazz, but it was, like cool jazz, planned. So two main offshoots of bebop did away with these large chunks of improvisation that were a part of that music. Prominent hard bop musicians, here's a list: Horace Silver, Clifford Brown, you've heard of many of these, Charles Mingus, Art Blakey, Cannonball Adderley, John Coltrane, Hank Mobley, Thelonious Monk worked in this style, Lee Morgan, Wes Montgomery to a degree, Pat Martino. Some critics also saw hard bop as a response to cool jazz and West Coast jazz, where many thought the West Coast jazz and the cool jazz was just gimmicky and was not a valid extension of jazz tradition and didn't really further what was happening. And where cool jazz reflected, say, the California lifestyle, hard bop was much more driving and much more city and much more New York City. And I find it to be a pretty fascinating style of music myself. And so we'll go out with a hard bop track today and wrap up our little mini history, a very brief mini history of bebop. And we'll hear a song called Are You Real from an album by Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers called Moanin', which is a staple of the hard bop genre. If you want to get into hard bop, this is as good a place as any to start. So let's hear that. Hope everybody has enjoyed this little brief history of bebop. I'd love to hear any feedback, any corrections, any suggestions you might have. You can get in touch with us at the email address rock@suburbspod.com. And of course, you can find us out there on Facebook and the social medias at suburbspod. Hope you've enjoyed listening to it as much as I have enjoyed putting it together for you. And with that, I'll take you out with Art Blakey, Are You Real? And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Apparently during the 1950s, I don't know much about it, but there was a mambo craze where people were really into doing the mambo.